I'm Bex Dillon and welcome to this podcast, Conversations on Faith and Equality. In today's podcast, we've got Annika Wallington, who is an entrepreneur. She's founded this beautiful jewellery brand called Recognised. And I love the jewellery, and it's sort of a social impact business that you buy all these different pop-ons, which she'll talk about, to support different causes. So it's sort of raising awareness of these causes, but it's about more than that, really. It's the reason why she's called it Recognised, she'll talk about and explain more in depth in this podcast, but about seeing people where they're at and the struggles that people are going through that I found particularly interesting and wanted to talk about. But also, she runs this with her husband, so what's that like being a married couple and doing things? How do you work out equality in your marriage, in your business partnership, in running a business? But also, what's it like as a female founder and a CEO? You know, how has she found that? Has she found there to be sort of struggles and inequality? So I really enjoyed this conversation with Annika. I think it's really impressive what she's done, and she's really interesting to hear from. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. Here you go. And thank you so much for doing it, Annika. I feel like lots of people have been saying to me, oh, there's this like amazing person, Annika, and this jewellery brand, you'll love it, you should definitely interview her. And then I got given the Dove for my birthday in October, and I love it. It's like one of my favourite things. So I kind of was really, yeah, it made me really interested in you and what you do. So I just thought I'd love to hear sort of how it started, how this brand began.
Absolutely. Well, for those listening, I'm Annika, I'm Recognised with my husband Joel, and Recognised, Bex, you briefly touched upon it, but yeah, we bring together amazing causes with beautiful jewellery to help people feel recognised and to help people feel seen in experiences in life that many of us face. So how that works, and I'll tell you a bit about where it all came from, but how that actually works is right now we use jewellery as a vehicle to do that. We think there's lots of ways that you can recognise people, but we found jewellery a really powerful kind of vehicle mechanism for doing that. So at the moment you can pick a jewellery base, which is a bangle or a necklace, and then you pick what's called a statement pop-on, which are kind of little motifs, or I hate the word charm, but just because you can't see it, I'm going to say it. But yeah, little charms that you put onto our jewellery bases, and each one of those pop-ons support a different cause, and then 100% of are donated to our charity partners. So Bex, you wear the Dove pop-on, which is for mental health. You know, of course, 100% of profits being donated enables us to have incredible, you know, impact with our charity partners. And I'm really proud personally of, you know, some of the work that we've been able to kind of fuel and support. But actually this kind of bigger iceberg piece of impact is this concept of recognition and this idea that when someone is recognised and seen, things really actually begin to change within them. You know, so many, we all need to feel seen. Mm-hmm. So many of us are walking through mental health, cancer, feeling on the edges of society, feeling left out. We all have unique experiences, and so often we don't feel seen in those things, and that causes us, causes actually society, I think, kind of turmoil. So we're really passionate about bringing recognition and meaningful connections to help change society. It all started we started the brand 3 years ago, but about 6 years ago now, so when I was back at university, I had a dream one evening, and in my dream I saw a woman who had depression walking into a supermarket, and at the till point she saw another woman wearing a bracelet that had a Dove on, and I saw the words, "I stand with you," and in that moment the woman who felt, you know, alone and had was going through depression didn't feel as alone, and had this moment of hope and this moment of someone recognises me, someone else understands. And I woke up from that dream and thought, wow, that was a very vivid, you know, clear dream. And I actually went back to university that term and had so many friends all of a sudden come up to me and talk to me about their mental health. And it wasn't until I had one of my best friends come up to me and said to me, "Annika, I've actually just had depression for 3 months," that I really kind of was struck, because she talked to me about it after she'd gone through it, not at the time. And it really got me thinking about my dream, because I thought, well, you know, so many people here are struggling in silence, but they're not the only ones. Mm. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things I've learned through recognising through what we do, is that we're never the only ones going through something on our own. There's always someone else who's walked a similar path and that can, through sharing their experience, bring hope, bring recognition, bring healing. And so, yeah, anyway, so when my friend came up to me and said, you know, I've just had depression for 3 months, I thought, oh my gosh, you've literally been struggling in silence. And it got me thinking about the dream. And I thought, well, maybe there is something that you can wear that can be that symbol of hope to a friend, that can start a conversation with a complete stranger, and ultimately let someone know that you see them and they're not alone. Mm. And that's really where Recognised was kind of birthed.
Mm. I love that. I feel like that's part of actually even like what this podcast has been about. It's like helping people understand other people's situation, and not necessarily that you're then going to be able to fix it or do something about it, but the thought that people want to hear or understand where you're at and be with you in that is what gives so much of power to the other person, to think like, I want to stand with you in your situation, I want to be there for you, even if I can't solve it, I'm here, I'm standing with you. And I think particularly with mental health, it can be a very lonely place for people to be in. So the thought that someone's saying, I sort of see where you're at, I recognise where you're at, I think is such an amazing thing for someone to do as a friend and as kind of community around them.
Yeah, I think it changes everything. You know, I think we all go through experiences in life, and I think that's why causes are such a big part of recognition, is because they're often the things we feel unseen in and alone in, or often the stigma attached to them, and they can make you feel so isolated. And sometimes that could be as simple as you're completely decision fatigued because you're going through cancer, and you somehow and actually can isolate you, or you feel like the only one, or you're going through your mental health and the stigma attached to that, or for whatever reason we can end up, I think, isolation perpetuates issues and experiences, so we end up feeling unseen. And I think, yeah, when someone else can say, hey, I see what you're going through, or they open up and they share, like you said, it's not about fixing, but it's about coming alongside. And I don't know if you know Bex, but we just brought out, Recognised just brought out a report called the Age of Recognition Report, which is kind of, through our kind of few years of running Recognised and seeing this power of, yeah, recognition, we wanted to understand it more. And so it really looks at kind of the power of meaningful connections and, yeah, how recognition plays a part in bringing healing and hope to people. And one of the things, well, the main kind of thing that came out of it was that when someone's recognised, they ultimately, it deconstructs shame from feeling alone. It gives you purpose, it helps you know that your life matters, and that ultimately leads to not feeling alone, and to feeling loved and understood, which are two kind of basic human needs that I think all of us need to experience.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's such an important thing for people to know, because actually in your mind you can play so many games of like, no one's going to understand me, no one's going to know, if they knew this I would feel like even more excluded. But actually, it's like when you voice things and someone says, oh, that's a totally normal thing to feel, you're like, oh, okay, I'm not totally going crazy. It's not like I'm not the only person in the world to ever have those thoughts or those fears or those anxieties. It's actually like that, the like to be known and feel like understood in that is a huge sort of step to take.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's what shame puts you in the dark, doesn't it? So you feel, and when you speak something out, whether it's you speaking or someone else speaking, any fantasies that you've had in your head get completely annihilated from thinking, I'm the only one who thinks this, I'm absolutely crazy, or, you know, we have a motherhood pop-on, actually, that kind of recognises every mother's experience, whether you're a new mum, a single mum, a stepmom trying to have children, maybe you've lost children. And actually one of the things that we've seen a lot of conversation around is kind of women that have had miscarriages or have lost children, and actually a whole kind of realm of people not feeling that that's something that they can openly talk about, and you know, just to kind of tell a story around that. A couple of years, well, when was it? I always lose sight timeline now of where we are. Like, what year are we in? But last August, I was in Oxford Street at one of our pop-ups, and a woman came up to our pop-up, and we kind of talked her through the causes and got to motherhood, and she asked, you know, why motherhood? And we kind of explained to her, we happened to say, you know, it also recognises you as a mum if you haven't had children yet, you're really trying to have children, and it recognises that journey. And she just burst out crying, and she said, you know, no one has ever talked to me about this. I've always felt like I've had to hide, you know. She said, I've lost 2 babies, I've never been able to talk about it. I think she wasn't from the UK, but she said there was a lot of stigma in the society that she'd kind of been living in. Anyway, she went on to buy the motherhood heart to recognise the 2 children that she'd lost. Mm-hmm. And she came back to the counter after she kind of purchased it, and she said, this has been the symbolic closure that I've needed for so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank you for recognising me. She said, this experience has changed my life. Wow. And I think it was actually, like, we have moments after moment like that. And I remember when she said that, I thought, wow, someone can say that being seen has changed their life. There's something powerful in that, and we need to understand it more, because we need to equip people to help people feel seen. And just as we've just been talking about, one of the major ways we can equip people is to help open conversations and to be vulnerable and to step out and be courageous in sharing our own experiences, so mm-hmm. that the person who feels like they're going mad in their head because they're having intrusive thoughts about suicide hears, oh, hold on a sec, I've had thoughts about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or the mum who's worn out and thinks, surely I'm just like the worst mum because I can't hold it all together and I can't do this and that. It's not true. When someone else says, hey, I've also been there, all of a sudden it just brings so much comfort, doesn't it? And I think, yeah, it helps people not feel alone. And I think that's ultimately what we all need to feel in life, is not alone.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like to do that now, having just gone through COVID, where people have felt even more isolated and people's mental health has been affected, it's like even more important to recognise where people are at and what's been going on, that they feel seen, because it feels like even more people are sort of behind closed doors struggling with things. So this is like, you want people to be able to say, like, this is what's going on, and people say, okay, I like see where you're at, and that's an okay place to be at, and that's a normal place to be at. I mean, until the pandemic, actually, I'd not really felt like I understood mental health and having bad mental health, and I hit like such a low. But actually, it was the people who just were like, it's totally normal, it's okay what you're feeling, I'm like here with you, that made the biggest kind of impact for me, that I felt like, okay, it's okay if I feel like I'm feeling the craziest things. I don't have to sort of judge myself or feel any shame. It's just, but the comfort of like someone just saying, okay, I like get that you're struggling, and I like see that, and I'm here for you, is sort of what you want in a friendship. What you want is just like acknowledgement of that, isn't it? And that's, I guess, what you're saying with these pieces. It's like trying to acknowledge people's difficulties and struggles, and it's such a like powerful and beautiful way to do it, with a beautiful piece of jewelry rather than just.
Yeah, well, I think it's like you said, acknowledgement and or validation is like another word, I think, as well. So we just want to be validated and understood.
Mm.
And I think, yes, sometimes having a conversation is really powerful, but sometimes actually our own capacity levels don't allow us to do that. Or there could be a complete stranger, you know, that needs to see that symbol. And sometimes it doesn't even need to be a conversation, but it can just be that little thing that you see that says, oh, I know that you see me and you understand. Mm. What I'm going through, or like an element of it. And yeah, so I think it's interesting with jewellery, because, you know, we've recognised when I had the dream, obviously I saw a piece of jewellery, but, you know, my background was never in jewellery. I could never draw at school. I never thought I'd create a jewellery brand. You know, it's not a jewellery brand. We're all about recognition, but, you know, we retail jewellery. And yeah, I think it's been an incredibly powerful, yeah, as I said at the beginning, vehicle that people can give to a loved one. You know, the amount of women and men that we have who come and buy our cancer support initials with someone's initial on in their family, maybe a spouse that they've lost or someone that's going through cancer. It's, yeah, our kind of strapline is, the most precious gift is recognition. And I guess that says it all, really, that sort of, sometimes it can be a conversation, or it could just be literally giving something to someone. Says, I really recognise you, and you're seen, and you're not alone.
Mm. And you started it with your husband. How did that sort of come about? How did it work together then?
Well, we I'm laughing because there's just so much I can say about that. You kind of got to go back to the beginning of our relationship. So on our first date, we both talked about using business for social good. And it's kind of, we always find it really odd now when you look forwards and seeing kind of what we've built together and what we're doing. But Joel had been in a charity background beforehand, and he'd run a charity called Chasing Zero, and I was studying business and marketing at the time. We actually studied the same course at the same uni, 6 years apart. We met at one of his charity events because one of my friends was a student ambassador for them, and I was helping out, and Joel and they worked that evening. But anyway, that's a side note. You can include it in the podcast if you want to or not. But anyway, I guess, yeah, from the beginning of our relationship, I think there's a joint kind of calling or purpose on our lives to use creation to infiltrate society and business. I think business is a really exciting area to work in because it probably has arguably one of the most influential kind of spheres in our society. You know, you think you get up in the morning and you brush your teeth and you've already used a brand. And by the time you've got to work, you've probably seen a million advertisements, and you can take it onwards to the end of your day and you go to bed and maybe use a pillow spray or whatever. You know, we're always surrounded by businesses, and I think I've always been really excited about social justice and passionate about making a difference in the world, and so is Joel. But equally, we kind of have this skill set and this kind of visionary creative gifting that. And strategic gifting that really works in business. So I think actually we've kind of found this sweet spot of using business for good. So that was kind of, I guess, that's a bit of a flavour of our marriage and what we're kind of passionate about. But I'd obviously had the dream at uni, and I'd been talking to Joel about it. But it wasn't until a couple of years later that I actually kind of took the leap of faith and left my job. And I can tell you offline all the stories behind that. But there was a whole load of... it really was a leap of faith for me. And once I took that leap of faith in February 2018, just so much stuff just began to happen in the business. And
so by that stage, how long had you been married for?
No, we were married. We got married 2016.
Okay.
So 2017 in the summer, I really knew it was time to kind of crack on with the business. And I had a real conviction that it was the time, and I'd met with a few people in kind of the social impact and fashion industry who'd also said, "This is an amazing idea. You need to do it. Like, do it now." And I was actually working for One Life at the time, and I'd go to work every morning, and I just couldn't get away from the feeling that this was something I was supposed to do. And so every morning and evening, I would get up and write a business plan, and then I just kind of met with everyone that I could meet with, and. Yeah,
and had you ever started a business before that?
No. There's so many stories wrapped up in it. Essentially, I left my job March 2018, and the following day, we had 2 months' worth of my salary in our bank account completely randomly. Which was a random tax return, and it just felt like one of those moments where you think, real sign of you're doing the right thing, and it was a real sign of provision for the kind of leap of faith that we'd taken. Anyway, next day, it's Easter Saturday 2018, and Joel wakes up in the night, and he had just an overwhelming feeling that he needed to also leave his job.
What was he doing at the time?
He was making a lot of money in management consulting.
Oh, wow.
So I was working for a charity, so I was bringing maybe it was still a big leap of faith to leave my job, but actually for Joel, like financially, it was quite a huge thing for us both. And so he basically then went on like a 6-week journey where we basically said, okay, we need this much money to start the business. We started to talk to people. The money ended up coming from completely left field, someone that we didn't even know had money or was in a position to invest in the business, but basically turned around and said, I see so much light in this business and so much hope, and I want to invest in it. And it's just really interesting that was the initial kind of funding in the business from someone who saw hope and light in it at a time when she really needed it. And I think that's probably 2 things I would say our business has gone on to kind of mark in society is hope and light. And yeah, so anyway, Joel left his job 6 weeks later after kind of waking up in the night and feeling like it was the right thing to do. And we spent the summer of 2018 launching the brand, and then we launched it on World Mental Health Day 2018.
Wow, cool. And then now, how's it worked? So you kind of had this vision, you quit your job, he quit his job. How has that worked then, the two of you running it? Have you stayed like side by side? Have like, you know, as your idea, do you kind of run it and he supports you? How do you work that out? Not just as like two individuals starting a business, but as a married couple?
I think it's completely evolved and it changes. And I think been a big lesson for us is learning how to be fluid and not feeling like something has to be set, because not only, you know, things would change anyway in like a business or a role that you'd have in your job, but then you've got influences coming from your marriage and what's right for your life and your stage and each other. So we've always had to be quite fluid with it, and we were actually given a picture quite early on in doing the business together, and it was kind of this idea that Joel would kind of come in and out of the business. And so, you know, you think about, but actually our kind of power and decision-making is completely equal in the business. But I definitely say I'm the one that's leading forth the vision and the development of brand and product and impact and that side of things. And actually quite recently, back in the summer, we kind of had this amazing revelation that I think for a long time we've been saying, you know, this startup business is really, it's overwhelming. And then I think when we turned it on its head, we actually realized, oh, we're not overwhelmed. It's just all consuming. And running a business together, not just a business, but a startup business, can come completely all consuming, because you can't just switch off from it. And particularly when there's kind of a deeper purpose to what we're doing, it doesn't just feel like a job to us. It feels like a genuine kind of calling and mission and something we want to see in the world bring to life and help people feel really seen and to know that they're not alone. So it's not something that we can just kind of turn off when we're having dinner, which at times causes friction. So
I'm like always interested in people who work together and who are married, because one of the things that I always think is that what makes marriages feel equal is like a kind of sense of feeling equally respected and equally having your sort of say and power in your relationship. But when you add in other factors, that can sort of affect that sort of feeling of equal respect and power in the relationship. So like these last few years of not working, although like there's been times where I've worked and Miles hasn't, I feel like that hasn't affected it. But when he works and I don't, I feel like, oh, am I slightly like, you know, does he have more of a say than me because he's earning the money? So if I'm saying let's not, you know, let's buy this, whatever, you know, should his say be more? So, but I feel like it's not always, those factors aren't always what make you feel that kind of equal say. I think if you're working together and you're trying to run something together, you must be like constantly working out how to manage that, and other times where you're like, no, I really think this is what we should do, and he's like, oh, I really think this is what we should do, and they're different, and you've got to work that out as a couple leading other people, because you've got people that work for you, and then like go home and be like, was that okay, you know, are we okay to have those differences?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and yeah, you've depicted that really well. I think, interestingly, I think the reason it's worked with Joel and I, as I kind of said before, our skill sets really complement each other. So we're able to kind of give each other a lot of free rein in those areas, because the things that I'm working on don't particularly clash with the things that Joel wants to work on. So financial models and all of this stuff, all of that stuff, which just because I'm a woman and I thought this is important to say, I'm equally able to do. It just doesn't give me a lot of joy. But I think sometimes people will say, oh, you know, oh, Joel does all the business stuff. And I think, hold on a second, that's not true at all. I have a first class degree in business and I could totally sit and do a financial model if I wanted to, but I don't think it's the best use of my giftings and skills for business. And it doesn't, quite frankly, I think I hate it. but you know, all of those kind of, Joel really thrives in, and likewise for me, vision, creating, like, yeah, product development, all of those things, like, I really thrive in. So there's quite clear role boundaries, which I think is really important, having, like, in any kind of organisation, having very clear responsibilities for your employees and for your roles helps, gives a lot of, like, structure over who's responsible for what. So in terms of decision making, we don't ever clash in those particular areas. But then I also think, because there is this deep root and this deep purpose to what we're doing, we actually, I find it very hard to tell you a time that we've disagreed on something quite major. We've always...
That's amazing.
Which is amazing. I honestly, like, I mean that. That might sound, people might not believe me, but honestly, we... And it doesn't mean we don't fight about things. I think the things that we find hard are professional boundaries and marriage boundaries. And being married. And that can look like working with your team, and like Joel in the early days would call me babe in front of the team, and I'd be like, what are you doing? Like, don't call me babe. Like, you know, we've got to keep things professional for them. Or, you know, Joel, I keep using Joel for examples, they'll be examples for me, but, you know, for example, if he was under a pressured situation at work and perhaps was a bit short with one of our team, as a wife, I'm sat there like, what? Joel, like, lead better, what are you doing? And like, likewise for me, he kind of, as a husband and wife relationship, you have the right and you have the trust and respect to speak into each other's development and life, and you want to grow each other to be the best versions of yourself. But at work, it'd be when else would you really go to one of your colleagues and say, you know, I don't think that was it okay that you just did that. And so it's kind of learning to separate those. And I think for a long time, we actually found that quite frustrating, or also just general, like, listening skills and feeling understood. All of the things that you deal with in marriage, that's definitely been something I think that we've really journeyed with, is learning to understand each other and the way that we're wired. I'm an extrovert, he's an introvert, like, our different needs. I think it's probably more just bringing all that stuff into the workplace and managing that, and not and just trying not to, like, get so frustrated, as opposed to ever having big disagreements.
And you mentioned a bit, you said that sometimes people think, like, oh, he does all the, like, business stuff for financial models, and you don't, because you're a woman, you're in, so, like, the creative bit. And that's another thing that I wanted to ask you, is, like, how do people perceive, do people have sort of stereotypes they meet you and you're like, as a couple we run this, and whether they sort of, yeah, whether you see some gender stereotypes then, either in people who you manage or people that sort of you meet externally, you're like, this is, you know, this is what we do, whether they, you see kind of how sometimes people can have those views that he's a man, so he'll be into this bit, and you're a woman, so you'll be into this bit. Do you see that?
Yeah, I think probably because of the comment, I've obviously definitely experienced that. I was thinking, obviously, because I knew what this podcast was all about, what we're going to talk about, and I was kind of thinking before I came on that sometimes I think inequality or stereotypes or those kinds of perceptions often aren't something that you can really evidence base. They're experience based, and sometimes that makes it really murky to kind of point out and highlight inequality when we see it in society, because you know, the equivalent, just okay, so give an example, a member of my team, love her to pieces, I won't say her name just in case she doesn't want the story shared, but she's black, and she, you know, when everything was kicking off with George Floyd, and, you know, there's lots of kind of open, or still is open conversation around race, and she said to me, well, I just wanted to ask her, honestly, like, what are your experiences? And she said, well, I'll never know, like, she always changes her name on her CVs when she applies for jobs, and the times that she hasn't, she says, I'll never know if I didn't get that job because of my name. And the reality is maybe that was true, but she'll never be able to prove it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she's even asking it shows that there's, like, something so systemic or something so real in her experience, or, like, kind of the society we live in, that she would even feel to question that. And I think it's the same with kind of what you just asked me about stereotypes or experiences where I felt unequal or prejudiced against with being a woman in business. You know, there's definitely moments that I am definitely aware of and have experienced and thought, hold on a sec, you know, like comments where people say, you know, not often, but I've definitely had the odd comment where someone says something like, oh yes, he's all the brains and you're beauty. Do you know what I mean? It's like, please.
Yeah, sometimes people say it almost as though that's a compliment. You're like, that's not really a compliment to anyone.
Yeah, and it's incredibly frustrating when also, you know, the business wouldn't be here without either of us. And we could actually, you know, there's such crossover at the same time. You know, I think particularly in a startup, when it's your baby, you know everything about the business. It's literally in your blood. It's so intuitive. I could tell you financials from our models without even looking at them. I just know. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just know. And there's definitely been moments where people have said things that I can definitely point out and say that's an evidence-based thing. But then there's a whole load of experience-based things as well that I could never prove. But you somehow leave a situation with a slight, was that okay? Like, was there something else going on there? I guess it leaves you feeling not as worthy.
I think part of it is like, what you're saying is there are comments, but sometimes you can just feel it. Like, you can't always fully articulate that you didn't, that what you're saying, that you don't feel quite treated right in the way that you should be. It's like, but when there's been a background, it's like what your friend's saying, sometimes when there's been like a background and you know it's happened in the past, some situations it's like you just kind of know that something doesn't feel quite right in the way that you've been treated, I think.
Yeah, totally. I think it's those situations where then having conversations can be really hard. You know, when people say, it's like when someone says, you know, oh, can you give me an example of when I behaved like that? And then all of a sudden you can't think. You're like, I don't know, but I know that you did. You know, I think it's so, like, you know, like, take gender inequality. Like, it's something that's so embedded in our society that girls literally grow up with rules that are different to boys from such a young age, and we grow up with, actually sometimes, hear this right, this could be taken so out of context, but sometimes we actually actively feed in to the problem, not necessarily on our own conscious thought, but, you know, we buy into the lies and the stereotypes, and we have to take a moment to question them for ourselves.
What do you mean by that, that we buy into them?
I think one of the things I realised, like, this year, and this is really vulnerable for me, but, you know, I think I realised this year that, oh my goodness, I've put a time clock on what we can achieve, we've recognised, on when I want to have children.
Mm.
And no one has explicitly said that to me. Really, I mean, I have had the old comment of like, you could never do this and have children. And, you know, I never ever challenged it and I never questioned it. You just internalize it. You don't really get defensive about it. You just kind of keep going, internalize it. And, you know, there's been the odd comment, but really no one ever, you know, no one ever said, oh, you've only got this amount of time and then you've got to have children and then that's that. But this year I basically realized I've put so much pressure on myself to achieve so much in a short period of time because I thought that having children as a woman would then hinder what I could then do in my business. I'm glad to say that I think I've had a massive wake-up moment and realised that that's just not true.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, I've internalised those messages from society and that's impacted my thoughts, which has impacted my actions. And I think... it's just interesting. So when I say, like, you can buy into ourselves, you know, I don't think it's something consciously that we do. And you might have read Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In. Have you read that?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
She talks about actually so many of us just won't even put our hand up because we've already counted ourselves out. And actually that is an action. And I mean, it's heartbreaking, but it is an action that we take. I did the other thing. I put my hand up but said, well, hold on, I'm still limiting myself, but I've just got to achieve a hell of a lot more in a short period of time and make my life a lot more stressful, which is just, is exactly the same as not putting your hand up, but just, the, you know, the other way. So, yeah, I think ultimately, we can just buy in to, when we start to just not question things, that's when I think we buy into kind of an inequality.
Do you think also you haven't had that many, I feel like a lot is changing now, but don't have that many role models to look to who are like way before you who have done it, or do you feel like there are?
I don't know why I'm finding it hard to answer that question, but I don't think, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, because there's a load of conversation, isn't there, about representation and the importance of it. And it probably is true in female entrepreneurship. And you know, I was just kind of like looking at some of the stats before I joined this call, and, you know, only 8 CEOs of FTSE 100 companies are female. And only 2% of, what is it, less than 2% of women received VC funding last year.
It's crazy.
You know, yeah, and out of all the UK funding that was provided to UK businesses this year, 90% of it went to all male leadership teams. So less than 10% went to women leadership teams. And I guess that is the landscape. But it doesn't have to be doom and gloom. I'm also so excited when I look around me, and I think there was more female businesses started last year than there were male businesses. And I look around, you know, Instagram, actually have all sorts of thoughts about Instagram, but actually one of the powerful things I do love about it is, you know, I'm able to follow other entrepreneurs a couple of years ahead of me who are starting businesses and talking about their experiences. And, you know, kind of like we're talking about at the beginning, you're able to relate, you're able to see them, you know, thriving, smashing it. I don't think I've ever had like a deep emotional experience around representation myself where I've thought, I can't see anyone doing this. But yeah, I guess when you look at the landscape,
then you realise there's actually so few.
It's not
just like that you haven't experienced it, so there aren't loads of women out there who are getting to those positions.
Yeah, and I think when you hear stats like that, there's pain in that when you start to ask why, you know, and can you ever change that? And I think that's where we all have to like contend with that question of, can I rise above this? Can we change this? Or do you just settle for, well, that's just the way it is? And I think that is the big question of inequality, is that just the way it is? Can I even be bothered to change it? Because it's always going to be like that. You know, that type of feeling. And I've felt both. Or there's other moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a girl boss. I'm smashing it. I can be that representation for another girl who wants to start her own business. And, you know, I think, but you can totally feel both at the same time. And I've come off, you know, I was on 2 calls in 2021 with all white, old male investors, and found it incredibly hard, and came off and just thought, I'm so misunderstood. I feel so awkward and uncomfortable in this environment. And it just makes you feel a bit like, ugh, these are the people who have the power. Is it ever going to change? And it just makes you feel a bit like, I think you've got to ride that feeling out and just think, you know, but make sure you get up the next day and then do something about it. But I think it's okay to kind of sit in that kind of like wallow of, oh, the world's a mess moment, but don't let it kind of sink you to your knees.
And it actually, I think I hadn't really thought of that before, that when you think of like business leaders, you're like, well, they can kind of do anything, they create, you know, they can be in all different sectors, so why would it matter, you know? But a lot does come down to investment, and if the investment is all coming from the same group of people, it doesn't really matter what sector you're working in and how much you're kind of a brilliant leader if the investors are still a group of people who like to give to the same people who look like them and are like them. That's always going to be a real challenge. And actually, one of the first ever podcasts that I did was with someone. She's like, you know, brilliant, so bright, running a brilliant business, but she says, as a black woman, I'm so unlikely to get money. And I walk into the room and they're all white men, and they're generally giving to people who look like them, who came from the same background, same universities, and they all kind of go and drink, you know, all connected in a world. And I think, like, well, that's a huge problem, isn't it? It's the investment, because to get a business going and running, you need investment.
It totally is, but it's not only their backgrounds, it's often how they want the pitch tailored to their needs, because I think I'll premise this with, I've also experienced some of the greatest generosity and support from that same group of people. You know, some of the people who've given me the best advice and actually given me a leg up. There was one person particularly last year who's opened so many doors to me, and I think has probably himself, you know, recognised gender inequality and wanted to, yeah, give someone else a leg up and make a difference in that. So I think I'd premise anything with that, because I think with all inequality conversations, we can't then go shame the other side. You know, I think you've got to work together. But I think, you know, just in relation to what the person that you were interviewing said, you know, it's not just those, the majority of people who have the power and have the money and can therefore impact change in your business, because you need to resource a business often for it to grow. They do often look the same, they have the same experiences, they have the same backgrounds, but they're also, they have the male gaze. And so female, they're not necessarily going to understand, not all the time, but I've definitely sat and had experiences where I've thought, I genuinely think if I was speaking to a female investor, they would understand this from a female gaze. Products that are designed for women and men trying to make a judgment on whether they should put their money in it. Of course, you're going to come up against issues there. You know, boys want to invest in the toys they understand. Do you know what I mean? So, and they also often, in, you know, people invest in people, so they're more likely, like you say, to invest in people that look like them. And again, probably all somewhat subconsciously, but I think that's where we all have to be so much more aware of the inequalities that are surrounding us, that we can actively challenge them and actively make decisions that go against our own decision making, whether our decision making we are consciously is right or wrong. Does that make sense?
Totally. I think you're right, so much is being aware. That's kind of the beginning, because then you think, okay, I'm being drawn to this person because, oh, like, it turns out we have all this stuff in common. We, like, look really similar. Like, I've got that natural connection, so maybe I need to just think about that being the reason why I'm kind of drawn to this person, because then at least your eyes are kind of open. Even if that doesn't change straight away, it's just some awareness of how all our background and where we come from and who we know does influence us, and at least if we can acknowledge that, that can help us be aware that that influences us more than we would want to or realise.
No, I completely agree. And it's hard, isn't it? Because no one wants to be. I think, from all my experience and conversations have been, particularly around race, you know, trying to educate people on that is, and I felt it myself, the immediate reaction is, I'm not racist. I'm not, you know, or men, if you tried to say to a group of male investors, you know, you're discriminating me because I'm a woman. Of course, like, when it's about, like, not labelling it in an accusing language, because, and it's about that educating piece, isn't it? Because no one's saying that. No one is saying that. What we're saying is we're part of the systemic structures that make us more, what's the word, like, attuned to making decisions that could be racist or discriminate against women. But yeah, I guess that's a whole education piece for people to understand and go on their own journey with, and not be afraid to say the wrong thing as well, or say the right thing. I think when I came on here, sometimes I think when you talk about inequality, it's like all of a sudden you, in theory, you always have two sides of a camp, so you can always offend someone. Yeah. And I think that's where we all always, I think most people kind of freak out about, like, saying the wrong thing. And I was watching, I don't know if you've seen the, like, Sex and the City reboot.
I've seen it, I haven't seen it.
There's a like, hilarious scene with Miranda in her, she goes back to university and her tutor is this amazing black woman who's got braids, and she just says something like, oh, you're the shooter or something, like, she completely mistook her for a student and then basically said, oh, it's because of your braids. And then obviously that led on to this whole conversation about hair and braids. And Miranda basically, like, is a self-fulfilling prophecy where she completely just, doesn't want to say the wrong thing, so continues to say, like, the wrong thing and completely freaks out. And I think it just made me laugh because I think I've so often been in that situation myself where I've so wanted not to offend or say the wrong thing. I've probably ended up saying the wrong thing, as opposed to just being honest and just being, like, vulnerable enough to say, I don't understand. Like, of course I can't understand your experience that you have lived because I haven't had those same experiences. Can we chat about that? Can tell me how you experienced me? Like, let's have these, you know, kind of open conversations and not be afraid, be willing to not be offended by things that really aren't part of the action.
You need, like, some grace, but also it is about really having conversation, being, like, up for having a conversation, which is going to be, could be really uncomfortable and challenging, and you might have to say, oh, sorry, I actually got that really wrong. But that's, like, a great start, though, isn't it? It's just to talk about it rather than isolate and push people into different sort of corners and not feel like they can cross over or know how to. The causes that you do this: mental health, cancer, modern day slavery, solidarity, and motherhood. Are those is it five? And I just wondered, you know, what the greatest inequality you think that you see in the world. Obviously, there are those five things, but if there's something that you think this is kind of the greatest inequality that I see.
I think that's a really hard question. As soon as you start trying to answer that question, you can see so many inequalities. But one of the things I think I've been thinking of, kind of have two things.
They're kind of connected.
and obviously all of our causes, there's an element of inequality within all of them, some more than others, you know, and anti-slavery, probably one of the biggest injustices that we face today. But when I was thinking about it, I originally thought about, so I've just been in America, and it basically got me thinking about healthcare and just how actually fortunate so many of us are to have access to free healthcare or some form of healthcare that's affordable and that you can access in or when you need it. And, you know, we're in America and obviously you've got to get travel insurance, and John and I had actually gotten to our travel insurance and then we got out there, and you can completely catastrophize the situation because you think, oh my gosh, well, what happens if, like, as a Joel, you could fall down the stairs and break your leg, and then, you know, we're going to be slapped with, like, £1 million bill in America. And, you know, that kind of all sounds quite funny, but the reality is that there's so many people that don't have access to healthcare. And I think when you really look at the roots of that, it's, you've got to ask the question, why is one family's experience more valuable than another's? And, you know, even, I guess, when you say what's the biggest inequality today, I think you've got to, when you look at healthcare, you've got to look at kind of vaccines. And last week, just before Christmas, I was on the call with the CEO, she's just left of ActionAid, and she was saying that just 8% of the developing world have had their first vaccine. We're on our third. You know, it's like most of, you know, as we're chatting, we probably want our boosters, some people are getting their fourth. And I just think in the last 2 years, when health has been, you know, something that we've all realised massively taken for granted, and that can cause fear and can actually impact life as we know it, I think actually health equality has got to be right up there, particularly when it feels like, the reason it feels like such a great inequality to me is because it's something that actually, in theory, could be quite easy to solve. Like, it seems like a money and distribution problem and not in the development world, so you can get someone from the UN to comment on how easy that is to solve. But, you know, actually something like race or gender or some of those other more system kind of based inequalities, of course they're huge. I don't think they're greater than the other, but I think that's a real long game in changing. And when you look at things that could just be solved with better distribution, more generosity, better funding, you know, children are dying in developing worlds from things that children would never die of here. And one of our causes, motherhood, it part of the donations go to a charitable pregnancy twinning, and you can twin your pregnancy with a woman in Malawi, so she has safe delivery and access to healthcare when she's, you know, carrying her baby. And actually the problems that you can have in the developing world to have a baby could be so easily fixed, and it's literally just it's a case of funding and distribution. And so I think, yeah, I guess where I'm going with that is I think actually we're every single human life is so valuable, and I don't see why someone's life in the West is more valuable than someone's baby, someone's child who could be dying in another country. So I think providing more equality there is really important. But that's the first thing. But that led me on to kind of, to be honest, just distribution of wealth in today's society, and how so many of us can have so much and so, but yet there's such great poverty, there's such desperate need. But yet, you know, is it the stat that, you know, 1% of the world hold like 99% of the world's income?
Yeah,
or something?
Crazy.
You know, it's just, you know, and, you know, we sit here in our nice homes, and of course we're a part of that, but, you know, there's greater extremes of, you know, billionaires and space, and then, you know, still desperate needs on our planet today. So I think, I guess all to say, I think there's a health and financial inequality.
Yeah, I think the health is such a good point. I think I was pregnant in India, and just so difficult to get to work out where to go, how much to pay, like, are they asking me to do this thing because they want the money or because they genuinely think I need this sort of treatment? Whereas we don't realise. Then when we came back, I was like, oh, we're so privileged with the NHS, where you walk in and you're not paying for anything and you get all these people looking after you, and you walk out with no bills, with no debt, with no, like, worry, are they trying to make money by giving me an extra dose of this or saying that I need this? It's
unfathomable, isn't it? It's literally, yeah, like I said, I think sometimes when you go to America and you realise, you hear the numbers that you know, even just to get an ambulance, I think, I don't even know, it's thousands of pounds. You just think, actually, that's, when you're going through a crisis that is literally life or death, or when you need someone to look after you, that is genuinely when you need compassion, and that's the last thing you want to be worrying about in that situation is money,
finance,
right?
Or
being treated like a commodity, because you can't. You want to be treated like a human. I think the greatest inequality that you see.
I like asking other people rather than answering the question. Yeah, I feel like there are so many, and I think what I find is true is that everyone's got a different perspective, which helps you to realise, like, there are so many different things. But I think inequality in general is what's the problem, which, like, covers it all, the fact that there is inequality.
Because
if there wasn't inequality, then then everything would be equal, if that makes sense. The fact, I think, and the greater inequality there is, the more problems there are. So in companies where the people earn so much more than the people at the bottom, then there's, like, that creates more of a problem, because there's such huge inequality. And in cities where there's people living on, like, in Mumbai, there's this building where there's, like, 7 floors just for staff, and then there's the swimming pool, and then there's, like, the whatever, however many floors for the rest, for the person who lives there and all their families. But then just round the corner is, like, one of the biggest slums. It's like these two things.
Yeah.
It's just, you can't. But I'm like, surely that's going to create problems, that there's this extreme luxury and this extreme poverty living next door to it. Whereas it feels like the societies that run the best and the places that function the best is where there's not such extremes, where there's, like, the top and the bottom don't have such a big gap.
Yeah.
And actually sometimes you can see it more when it's not your own country or culture. You can see the divide more starkly than you can in your own country, because you can kind of, there's part of you that wants to sort of justify it in your own place, or that you don't see it so obviously, but when you come as an outsider, it's so much more obvious, because I feel like not everyone in Mumbai would necessarily see it, but when you come as an outsider, you're like, oh, you just see the contrast so much more.
You have fresh eyes, don't you?
Yeah, and that's probably, I feel like people would probably come to the UK and be like, well, there are children, you know, everywhere's got its issues, but sometimes as an outsider you see it better than you do when it's your own place and your country. Thank you so much, Mika. That's great.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so nice to have you. It's so nice. And thank you so much, Annika.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, Conversations on Faith and Equality, and this episode with Annika Wallington. I really enjoyed listening to her, and I think it's something that I'm going to think about quite a lot, is when she says the most precious gift is recognition, because when someone is recognised, it deconstructs pain. I really love that, because I think so much of what this podcast has been about, if you've listened to other episodes, is about hearing where other people are at and trying to see what life is like for them when it might be different for your experience of life for yourself. And when people have been struggling or in pain, sometimes you don't know what to do, but you can start with just recognizing where they're at. So that's really impacted me. So I hope you enjoyed listening to it. Please comment on it, leave a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback, and thank you so much for listening.